After Blenheim by Robert Southey. It was a summer evening. Old Caspar's work was done, and he before his cottage door was sitting in the sun. And by him sported on the green his little grandchild, Wilhelmine. She saw her brother Peterkin roll something large and round, which he beside the rivulet, in playing there, had found. He came to ask what he had found that was so large and smooth and round. Old Caspar took it from the boy, who stood expectant by, and then the old man shook his head, and, with a natural sigh, "'Tis some poor fellow's skull," said he, "who fell in the great victory. I find them in the garden, for there's many hereabout, and often when I go to plough, the ploughshare turns them out, for many thousand men," said he, "were slain in that great victory." "Now tell us what 'twas all about, young Peterkin," he cries, and little Wilhelmine looks up with wonder-waiting eyes. "Now tell us all about the war, and what they fought each other for." "It was the English," Caspar cried, "who put the French to rout. But what they fought each other for, I could not well make out. But everybody said," quoth he, "that 'twas a famous victory. My father lived at Blenheim then, yon little stream hard by. They burnt his dwelling to the ground, and he was forced to fly. So with his wife and child he fled, nor had he where to rest his head. With fire and sword the country round was wasted far and wide, and many a childing mother then, and many a newborn baby died. But things like that, you know, must be at every famous victory. They said it was a shocking sight after the field was won, for many thousand bodies here lay rotting in the sun. But things like that, you know, must be after a famous victory. Great praise the great Duke of Marlborough won, and our good Prince Eugene. Why, 'twas a very wicked thing," said little Wilhelmine. "Nay, nay, my little girl," quoth he, "it was a famous victory. And everybody praised the Duke, who this great fight did win." "But what good came of it at last?" quoth little Peterkin. "Why, that I cannot tell," said he, "but 'twas a famous victory." That was that poem by Robert Southey. I think I've been aware of it since my childhood, ready to dip into romantic poetry. So Robert Southey, he was poet laureate. Some people said he was appointed for political reasons because he was an outspoken supporter of the Tory party, but he had been somewhat radical when he was at Oxford, Balliol College, Oxford, co-writing a play about the French Revolution, rather sympathetic to his subject. And then he wrote this one. So the Battle of Blenheim, my goodness, was it 1708? Part of the Wars of Spanish Succession. And nobody but a historical obsessive like me would know what it's all about to prevent the same person being both King of France and King of Spain at the same time. So various countries leagued against France, fought in what's now Bavaria, Germany. But here Southey is expressing cynicism about these wars. Remember, he's writing about a century after Blenheim. He's writing during the Napoleonic Wars. So you think of these teenage soldiers, some of them would have died shrieking in agony, just the terror they felt at the end as their arteries were hived or whatever, they're badly wounded. They saw people get killed in front of them, they killed them as well. Some people survived, severely disabled, might have had limbs hacked off. Remember, no bionic limbs back then, blinded, deafened. Get really no help from their government, live in the most awful poverty after that. The mental torsion they went through, the post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, wasn't recognized until well into the 20th century. And these people had their livelihoods destroyed, the civilians round about, had their farmsteads burnt, talk about pregnant women dying because they're driven out into the winter snow, whatever, or just they're so terrified they might miscarry. children, elderly people dying as well, either directly or indirectly through the conflict, and all this suffering. And so all this suffering, some young man pouring out his life's blood, well, there must be some overwhelmingly morally imperative reason for that, mustn't there? And then the old man, Casper, he doesn't even know what it is when he's speaking to his grandchildren, and his grandchildren are wiser than him, well, out of the mouth of babes. But if all these people suffered so much, surely there was some very, very good reason why they had to go through it. And the grandfather can only say it was a famous victory. All this horror, all that suffering. And Wilhelmine, the little girl, she's the sagest of them all, saying it was a very wicked thing. And it's not to be celebrated, this mass killing. And if it was so vital, how come we don't know why they were fighting, and what good came of it, or what evil was prevented? And the grandfather doesn't even know. He's just parroting that line, bit of the Semmelweis reflex, to think that it's a good thing because he's been told it's a good thing. Why should anybody care whether the same person rules both France and Spain? I mean, it's up to France and Spain, not for the other German states or the United Kingdom to prevent it. Well, the UK didn't really emerge to the end of this. And Prinz Eugen, that sort of North German hero, that's why the Third Reich named a battleship in his honor. Blenheim, as it is in German, Blenheim is anglicized. So the Duke of Marlborough was the English general, Sir John Churchill from Wiltshire, ancestor of Winston Churchill. And that's why they rose to such prominence. And you've got the only non-royal, non-ecclesiastical palace in the British Isles, Blenheim Palace, 8 miles north of Oxford. That's the birthplace of Winston Churchill. So, the futility of war, that these young men, so many of them, they gave the only lives they had to give. They suffered and suffered so much. And maybe not just the death, not just being wounded, being taken prisoner, being tortured, being locked up in some horrific dungeon for years on end without seeing their family or friends, or just marching to and fro in the freezing cold, in the scorching heat, under a heavy pack, sweating, suffering, being filthy, and being able to wash, being able to eat a bit of rotten rations, freezing cold, and maybe not even if rations sometimes. Just the most unbelievable suffering. For what? For what? And it's not appreciated. Their name liveth forevermore. What a cruel lie. It doesn't live forevermore. And people are not grateful. You will not be remembered. You will not be appreciated. And then, whilst you're suffering the most unspeakable horrors, think of people at home who managed to avoid it, the rich, the well-connected, and they'll be still living it up. And you'll think, well, what a chump you were to allow yourself to suffer so much. And Ian, it's very seldom that clear-cut, the one side is 100% good or 100% evil in its actuation, or indeed in the conduct of the war. So here he is, scorning all these chauvinists and rather gullible people who would easily be led to war. So I'm not a pacifist, but I somewhat agree with Southey on this one, that virtually nobody would be able to tell you, or even the name of the War of Spanish Succession. Right, thank you so much for my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79 at gmail.com. Goodbye.